Hey, welcome to the You Are Covered podcast. My name is Hannah Lynn Miller. I am your host. I love talking about fashion, theology, and therapy. I am a clinical mental health counselor. I'm an intern, so I'm not licensed yet, and I'm in the process. That's why I am just excited to share with you all the things that I'm learning. The thing about being a student is that you get your hands on like the most updated research, and it's so interesting because the research that's going out there into the world right now about mental health, a lot of the data and the research has to do and revolves around women. So women are being studied for the first time in masses because a lot of the studies that we've had in psychology previously has had to do with men, which is very interesting to me because men and women are different. And so the results that we have in research tend to be a little bit more different if you're studying women. So that's something that's really exciting. I was studying for my NCE exam, and that was one of the questions that is going to be on my exam. So there you go. But we're going to first start off with fashion and what's going on in the fashion industry. I just want you to know that this is the You Are Covered podcast. So we cover all the things. I think there was a YouTube comment that was saying, I clicked on this and I wanted to hear about attachment styles, but you're talking about fashion. And all of those three things are going to be in this episode. So you can fast forward, you can listen to the whole thing, you can listen to just the part that you're interested in. That is why I created this podcast to have three parts. So I won't be offended. I totally get it. Some days I am not really into listening to a podcast about mental health. Some days I just want to talk about fashion and fashion industry and fashion trends, fashion psychology. And it's just a lot easier for me to, you know, jump in on that topic, right? And then some days I really do want to learn more about God and study, and I need like a little bit more spiritual encouragement. And so I totally get it. And that's why for me, this podcast is what it is, because I just always feel like I'm wanting three of those things. I'm wanting three of those things. And then once in a while, I'll like a business podcast just thrown in there. And that's why maybe in the future, I'll finally get up a couple of business tips on my YouTube channel. So I don't know if I'll make it into the podcast, but I do want to share all the things that I've learned. It's been a year of owning my own media business and company. And so I wanted to share a few things that I've learned about social media in general, because I've been doing that a lot longer than owning a business. And so look out for that on the YouTube channel. But all that to say is let's dive into our fashion segment of the week. Okay, so I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, and there's something called circular fashion, which means that it's basically recycled fashion, or it's making a designer bag or purse or any kind of fashion piece. The life of that piece is elongated. So it's in a circular fashion. Circular fashion. Get it? Okay. Anyways, that's where it comes from. But there was something called The Restory, and it was a London-based luxury repair startup. And I was excited about this. I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the podcast, but I wanted to let you know that it no longer exists, which really is frustrating. But here's the thing is fast fashion is where it's at. That's where the money is. And so this circular fashion thing, it's not working economically because of how fast the fashion industry moves and how to make money and how to run things. I don't really know what they could have done differently. I don't know if maybe they could have done less marketing and kind of just focused on the storefront. I'm not really sure what they could have done differently or how this can work better. But basically what you would do is you'd go in and you'd get your handbag, the handle fixed or something like that. But it didn't work. This is from Glossy, the weekend update, and it's like the email update. And so they said that the company had started in 2015. It was a repair marketplace where clients could submit a kind of repair that they needed, and the restory would come and connect them with the program corporate artisan or tailor who could do it. And in the years that the Rustery was around, it attracted attention from bigger fashion companies like Farfetch and Selfridges, which established partnerships within the company. Fellow repair provider and cobblers took a 50% stake in the Rustery last year, and the company also raised more than $4 million in funding from investors, but they were not able to stay afloat, citing high costs and thin margins on its transactions. The company was in dire financial situations last summer before the cobblers took a stake in it, but it wasn't able to turn things around, and all of its staff will now be laid off, which is really frustrating. Facilitating circular fashion from retail to resale to repair is often logistically intense, and companies attempting to do so will often have thin margins. So it just kind of is a bummer, because this is something that is needed. It's needed to have, you know, as we create new fashion trends, as we create new things, we also want to elongate the life of other fashion pieces. And this is a way to do that. You know, not everyone knows how to sew or how to fix leather, like a luxury leather brand purse. Like that would be so hard. And so something like this would have been a really cool thing to be able to just walk in and contact somebody and say, hey, this is what's going on with my luxury item. And then that way it's more economical. And then also it's extending a life on a product, which I find very, very interesting. Yeah, this is just a bummer, guys. But anyways, I hope that you find this interesting as much as I do. I'll keep you updated on all the things, this circular fashion phenomenon that is we are seeing in a lot of brands, that they're trying to do this and it's just not working. So I wonder what will happen. Side note, I just ordered a whole bunch of Allbirds shoes for the spring. Speaking of sustainable fashion, and the reason why I got these shoes is that I'm obsessed with wool. Wool is such an interesting textile for me. And so I bought flats, and then I also bought some slip-on shoes for the summer. And when you think wool, you're like, okay, like that's warm, you know, it's more for winter, but it's actually not. It's so breathable that it can keep you really cool. And they say this about shirts too, wool shirts that are thin. A lot of athletes will use them because when it's created with wool, it's breathable in the summertime, and then also in the wintertime, it keeps you warm. So it's very versatile. It's so fascinating. I've learned so much about wool, and John like laughs at me because I actually look up, you know, people who take wool from like sheep and actually like use it in their business, and they create garments out of them. And it's like a whole, the process is all there. Like I've been looking up a whole bunch of people. So if you're interested in that, we could chat, because I think it's so fascinating. I kind of geek out about it, but that's just because I know that wool is such an interesting textile, and it's not harmful to an animal, and it's also such good quality. So anyways, these shoes, Allbirds is created these shoes that are washable, they're sustainably made, and they're made out of this wool fiber. And I've ordered more. I have one pair that I've just loved, and I wanted more colors, and so that's what I'm doing this spring. I have a discount code for you in the description below if you would like to check it out. You totally should. It's such a great company. I'm a big fan. And get your first pair and tell me what you think. Like, I absolutely love it. So the link is down below. Why do women need to learn theology? This title caught me by surprise. I was Googling questions about theology and things that I wanted to start tackling on the blog. And I was just curious about some questions that people had. And there was an article that showed up and it just said why women should learn about theology. I kind of skipped the article just because I didn't recognize the author. I didn't read the whole thing, but it did get me thinking about a good topic to talk about. And so that's why I want to tackle it today, why women should learn about theology. I think it's very, very powerful, and it's a good thing to talk about. I come from a background where very traditional, and women were put in little boxes, basically. And it's hard. It's hard to even talk about because I don't think I've fully unpacked how this has affected me completely. But I do come from a background where, you know, women sit on one side of the church and men sit on the other. I come from a background where women wear head coverings. So it's a lot of interpreting scripture very literally because there are verses that say those things. There was a lot of emphasis on women being quiet, those things. And so, you know, that's why this topic is very, very, very dear to my heart. And whenever I have a client or whenever I have a young woman who has questions around their belonging in church or in their faith background, I always encourage them, read the Bible and study it for yourself. Like, read commentaries, study it. You know, don't just be taking it from the home church that you grew up in. Really challenge it. Like, read stuff for yourself. I know it really has helped me personally really unpack some of the damaging teachings that I have been fed from the evangelical church, but even further, the church background that my faith legacy is from. And I say it that way just because it is really important to recognize, you know, when with faith backgrounds, religious backgrounds, where you've come from, you know, and that's part of your story. And so you don't have to negate it and you don't have to be angry about it. You get to say, that's where I came from and this is what I've learned from it. And so this is a topic that I've really learned from my own upbringing and my own background. And one of those things is that women should learn theology. So here's a few things that I just jotted down. And first off, I want to say that I love learning from amazing women like Felicia Masonheimer. I think I'm saying that right, but she's the author of Every Woman a Theologian. She has her own brand and company and book and everything. And I really appreciate her and just how thoughtful she is and how she teaches women even things like how to teach the kids in your life too. The reason why I'm focusing on women today is because women are not always encouraged to learn for themselves. And there can be really hard and damaging messages in the church where, you know, they are supposed to be fed spiritually from the spiritual leader in their household that is a man. And I just don't think that this is true. I don't think that this is what God has for us as women. And so I just think that it's really powerful to learn from Lisa Turkhurst, from Beth Moore, from Felicia, like people, women who have learned and taught themselves God's word and studied who he is. Because theology, at the end of the day, is the study of God. That's all it is, right? And so studying God and knowing who he is, that is for every human being. So that is, it's so evil to me to think about the fact that somebody would say or hold to a belief that because someone is female, that they are not able to or should not learn about God and the study of him. I think that's so damaging and so evil. And it can look in different forms. And so if that has happened to you in any setting, you know, some of us women have had trauma going to Bible college even and having discussions about theology and feeling like they weren't heard or their opinion didn't matter. Those things stick with you for a long time. Trust me, I know. But I've also had amazing professors who've really encouraged me to dive in to God's word. And I'm so thankful for those experiences. But I do know that if it has happened to you in small ways, I don't want you to ever feel like that wasn't a big deal, because it totally was. And I get it, because I've experienced it multiple times. As a woman who has been going to a Bible college for many years now, someday I will graduate. But I understand how it feels. And, you know, even to the point of just not feeling smart enough. And it's so funny, because now I have three seminary emails. I have one from Wheaton, I have an email from Moody, and then I have an email from Northern Seminary. And those three, it's so funny. I don't think 18, 19-year-old Hannah would ever think that that is possible. So I work for, I'm an intern at, and I'm a student at these seminaries. And, you know, so I have seen it all. And so I understand. I totally get it. So I just want you to know that I'm here. I understand. I totally do. And I would love to sit across from you and just hear your story and be able to be a listening ear and somebody that can empathize with you and hear your heart on the things that you've been told and the lies that you have had to endure, and even some beliefs that have maybe sunk in to your heart. So here are some things that I just wrote down. There's definitely a trend in Christianity that I hate. I think it's so disgusting. I just said that you shouldn't question leadership or the men in your life, and because they should be the ones that lead you spiritually. Listen, men are sinful, okay? And so, come on. Like, we are to test what has been taught, okay? I just think that this is not what God wants for you. He wants a personal relationship with you. Everything else is man-made. So theology is the study of God. Study God for yourself, girlfriend. Because the second thing is, because there are wolves in sheep clothing. There's so many verses in the Old Testament saying this. In a perfect world, church leaders wouldn't be misleading or deceptive or manipulative or selfish, self-centered, narcissistic. In a perfect world, that would be great. But that's just not reality. So learning what the Bible has to say for yourself is so crucial and such a gift. Matthew 7:15 says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." 1 John 4:1 says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they come from God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world." 2 Corinthians 11:13-15 says, "For such men are false prophets, apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise that his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds." 2 Timothy 4:3 says, "For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but have itching ears. They will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions." That one gets me. That one gets me real hard. Okay, on that one, I'm like, okay, I've seen this. This sounds familiar. Matthew 10:16 says, "Behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." Okay, girlfriend, let me tell you, there's more. Like, when I was researching verses that talk about this, there's more. And it doesn't say, okay, only the men need to test the teachers. No, it's saying all of us, okay? So test, okay? Test and question and study for yourself. Third thing is that the Bible, and you can look at this in history, we see this in slavery, that the Bible has been weaponized towards marginalized people groups, and this has included women. Verses have been taken out of context to minimize all that God has created women to be. The Bible has been used in abusive ways towards women, and that's not okay. That's why understanding the cultural context of the Bible and what God is actually telling us about women in the church, in culture, and in families is so important. And I'm still ironing this out for myself. Like I said, I came from a background where everything was taken very literally. And if you read some of those passages about women literally, you can get into some real hard things. And I think that it can create a culture where women are not heard, not valued, not listened to. And that is so, so evil. So evil. The thing that gets me is studying psychology and studying the differences between men and women. It's so interesting how we even think. We think so differently. And men, they use one part of their brain. They use, when they're making decisions, they use the very decisive part of their brain, okay? And this leads for them to be very logical with decision making. And it can help them in other areas, but it also leads to a lot of reckless behavior. And that's why men have more problems with addictions. They're also the ones that will carry out suicide a lot more because they aren't using all parts of their brain. They're using a central part of their brain. So women use, you can see that their brains light up when they are making decisions. They use all parts of their brain, and especially the empathy part. And that's why it's so crucial. We are so uniquely made, so valued, and it's such a beautiful thing. And so just it gets me really hyped up. And I don't actually know. I'm still on this journey of figuring out what that looks like as a woman in the Christian church. But I do know that we are to be heard and valued, and that God valued us, and that values us, and that Jesus definitely was a fan of women and definitely valued women's opinions and hung out with them. He wasn't afraid of them, right? And so that's kind of where I'm at. Keeping it simple on this topic, I'm sorry if the Bible has been used as a weapon against you, and I'm sorry. That's all I need to say on that topic. The last point, and just a very practical point, is that women's conferences, their books, it's not giving you enough theology. It's usually very emotions and feelings based, which it has, that has a time and a place. Like, I'm big onto emotions and feelings, totally. But we really do need some solid biblical teaching. We really do. And just as much as men do. So I don't know why or when this got, switched around, but we need biblical sound teaching, and we need to learn about theology, and we need to learn about hermeneutics, and we absolutely should learn about hermeneutics. How do we study the Bible? How do we look at cultural context? The Bible was written in an ancient language originally. Like, we need to be able to understand that and understand the context. And if we don't learn about hermeneutics and how to study the Bible, we could get so deceived. And don't negate this, because I do think that the gospel message is very simple, and you don't need to go to Bible college, and you don't need to go, get a seminary degree. But I'm just saying, study for yourself. There's so many books out there, and I can give you a list of resources too that I have learned from. And my sister actually texted me this week and said, hey, look at what I'm reading. And I gave her an amazing book that is really good for hermeneutics, and I used for my undergrad classes. And she said she's reading it and it's so helpful. And it is called Living by the Book by Howard Hendricks, The Art and Science of Reading the Bible. It's a really great beginning place to start at, just to read more about it. You can do it. If I can't, listen, if I can learn theology, you can learn theology. That's the truth, okay? So anyways, that's my little rant on that. I hope that it motivates you. And those are my 4 points of why women should learn about theology. Very simple, straight to the point. Questions to ask your therapist. Here's a few things to ask your new therapist during the first session. This is just a guideline. I've noticed that a lot of times when you are in a session, you may be feeling overwhelmed. You're like, I've never done this before. I have no idea. They might have a lot of questions for you, and you're sitting across from a complete stranger. So what are some things that might give you a little bit more clue as to who the person is in front of you and what you need to know? This is just a few that I have written down. I'm going to put them in the show notes for you as well so that you can look it up. You can look at all the show notes on the youarecoveredpodcast.com. Okay. So first off, I would definitely ask about how much experience do you have in the topic or the area that you're going to therapy for. So if you're going to therapy for family or relationships or couples counseling, whatever it is, ask them how much experience they have with that. And then the other thing is, especially if you have any kind of trauma, you might want to ask, do they have any kind of experience in trauma counseling, trauma-informed counseling, PTSD work, stuff like that? I just think that it's just really important for you to know how much experience that person has and what are the techniques that they have used. The next question is, what kind of training has that therapist received? So you want to know, okay, you know, if they said, oh yeah, I have a specialty in PTSD, did they receive any extra training? Because having the specialty may mean that they just have worked with a lot of clients in that area and they are totally capable of that. But if they have any extra training, they would tell you. So that's a good question to have. The other thing is to ask if they are under supervision, because this might mean that they are not clinically licensed. And then they may also be an intern. So that'd give you like a little bit basis of where they're at. I still believe that interns are so capable. And this is me speaking as an intern because of how much training I have gone through. It is insane. So just because somebody is being supervised doesn't necessarily mean much. It just means, okay, I know that this person is being supervised. So what I am saying may go back to the supervisor. It's just good for you to know, okay? And then the next thing is, are you licensed? That is a good question. And yeah, you want to look for a licensed clinical therapist. You can ask, is therapy offered in person and also online, depending on what you are looking for? You can ask that individual, what is your specialty? What do you like working in? You can ask about the cost per session if you haven't already. You can ask about how payments are being made. Those are things that you want to get out of the way in the first session. I would also, if the counselor doesn't talk about this, but they definitely should, I would also ask about their confidentiality policy, just so that you know what it's going to be like. Like, say you see that therapist in person, how are they going to approach you? What can you expect? Typically, I usually say that I won't ever acknowledge, well, this is what a counselor has to say, that they won't ever acknowledge you, that they know you, unless you say hi first. So they're always going to act like they don't know you just because of confidentiality reasons. I would also ask about insurance. How does that work? I would ask about cancellation. So different practices have different things on cancellations, like 24-hour notice. Otherwise, you do get charged. There's so many different variations of cancellation fees. And then also, do you have a way that you want to be contacted? The best way to contact you, is it through email? Is there an office phone? What is the best way to contact your therapist? You know, something could happen. And then also, you could get stuck in traffic and have to say, hey, I'm coming, but I'm going to be 5 minutes late. I would also ask a few things about medication. Like, are you able to prescribe medication? So if you're going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, they might be able to prescribe medication, or they'll know people to send you to. I would also ask, how long have you been providing therapy? If that is important to you. For me, it wasn't. It really wasn't. I just needed somebody to listen to me. I'm like, can you just listen to me? I just need to talk. And that's true. That's the therapeutic relationship. It's very powerful. And then just a good question is, how long are sessions typically? I've been in counseling where the sessions were 30 minutes long, but typically sessions are 50 minutes. That's a standard across the board, but you can always clarify. and ask the therapist, what do therapy sessions look like? Some therapists are a lot more structured. Some are very client-led. Sometimes therapists are a lot more like bigger fans on homework, giving you homework to work on, things like that. And so asking, what does a typical therapy session look like? It can be really helpful for you to know what's gonna happen and how is it gonna be? Because it can be very overwhelming. And I always like to say this, when you are going to go to therapy for the first time, or maybe it's not the first time, but it's maybe you're having a harder time getting there, getting the help that you need, because life can be hard. I mean, especially if you have depression or anxiety or even ADHD. I've seen that it's hard to make an appointment or figure out insurance. Ask somebody that you trust. You know, if you are really struggling and you really need some help, I would ask somebody that you really trust to be able to make the appointment for you and get all the information that you need from the front desk person and be able to start that process for you, because it can be really hard to take that first step. And I know that I had an individual help me at a really hard point in my life to make the appointment. I have done it for other people. And so I always encourage people, if life is so overwhelming right now and you know you need help, maybe just asking somebody to take that first step for you and call to make the appointment can be really helpful. So I hope that this kind of makes the first session less scary. These are some questions that you can always ask your counselor. And, you know, they're so open and so happy to answer all of your questions, because they know it is intimidating, an intimidating process. Sometimes it can be really, really hard. And especially if you're facing some really hard things. So I hope that this list helps you. And I am just so thankful for you clicking on this podcast. I hope that your week is going amazing. And I pray that God is meeting you wherever you're at, whatever you're up to, wherever God has you in this moment. I pray that he meets you and that you learn more about him, okay? Because that is, at the end of the day, that is why we are on this planet. It is to know more about him and know that we are loved by him. And it's as simple as that, if you break it down. So, thank you for joining me. You can follow me on all platforms, Hannah Lynn Miller, and you can also follow this podcast, You Are Covered Podcast, on all platforms. And also, I want to let you know that the link for the Allbirds shoes are there. Check it out. I am a big fan of this wool. And I'm a big fan of washable shoes, okay? It's as simple as that. So check out that link, and I hope that you enjoy those shoes and let me know what you think. Okay, well, thanks for joining me on this episode, and I hope that I see you in the next one. Until then, God's got you, and you are covered.